Now, I personally believe, I'll put my cards on the table, our firefighters are unsung heroes. They're going about putting their life in danger all the time, often without thanks, often with very little reward. Obviously, it's the serious things like turning up at road traffic collisions and house fires where they have to see unmentionable tragedy to their time effectively being wasted, though they might not see it themselves, in putting out skip fires like we heard, protecting local properties or, for that matter, you know, gorse fires, protecting houses and all that type of stuff. And a lot of these people have regular jobs. But they have to have very accommodated employees and very tight restrictions on, you know, how far away from home they can live. So they do an awful lot of really good work. And they're up there with our ambulance drivers and our nurses, in my view. As I say, it's just my view. Others might have a different view. But they're on strike today. At 12 a.m. last night, firefighters from across the country turned off their pagers and prepared themselves for days and maybe even weeks of industrial action. In Donegal, five fire stations have silenced their pagers for 24 hours of strike action. Letterkenny, Donegal Town, Killybegs, Dunloe and Buncrana will be attending the council offices in Lifford until 1, and then the HQ of the Donegal Fire Service in Letterkenny from 1 to 5 to peacefully picket. So if you support them, give them a beep. I know when you're on a picket line, it is encouraging. So first, we might go to Stephen McFadden, who's the chair of the National Retained Firefighters Association, just to give us a clear outline of what's going on today. Stephen, thanks for taking the call this morning.
No problem, Greg.
All right, for those who may have missed the conversations that's been happening in chats last week, who is on strike today? You know, what part of the fire service is on strike today and why?
Well, today, 50%. Of all fire stations nationally are closed. So they are on a rolling strike. This is tomorrow. The other 50% will go on strike and the other crews will go back on. But this is a national strike, Craig. Although it affects Donegal, but it affects every county in Ireland now. So it does.
And in terms of putting in cover, what has engagement been like around the country with the powers that be to best facilitate this strike, but also have a level of service there?
Well, the local authorities were supposed to come up with a contingency plan, Greg, in relation to this. They got plenty of notice about it. But as, even of today as we speak, Donegal County Council Fire Service Management still don't have a contingency plan in place. Now, this strike is set to escalate at midnight next Tuesday, where all fire cover nationally will be withdrawn. And as I say, today, as we speak now, Donegal County Council, not on their own, along with all county councils, has no contingency plan in place. Although they got notice a month ago, so they did, from our trade union SIPTU, in relation to this industrial action. It was a workday rule last week. This week, now, it's 50% of station closures up until Tuesday, and if there's no meaningful negotiations with government, it'll be an all-out strike next Tuesday, Greg.
What does this mean if there's a fire starts in a building in Letterkenny? What impact might this have? I mean, I know the press release says pagers have been turned off. Have they, though? Or what would this mean if there were a fire in Letterkenny today, for an example?
Well, it would mean a slower response, Greg, to the actual incident. Like, Letterkenny is out on strike today, so it'll take either Falkara or Stranraer to turn up to that call now, which is going to be a serious reduction in response time to whatever incident that may occur or may not occur.
What ends this strike? Because there are some people saying, and it's our old friend, the Housing Minister, Dara O'Brien, who's responsible for this. Ends this? Like, can you as clearly as you can for listeners, tell us what would end this? What are the problems facing retained fire service personnel at the moment, and what would avoid the strike action next week?
Well, our members were in negotiation through our trade union mechanism, which is SIPTU, were in negotiations with government. Dara O'Brien stated quite clearly in November 15th last year in the Dáil, when we took a motion to government, the government came back with a counter motion, which they're quite entitled to do. They say that they would implement the COIN report, that was an internal review of the fire service. And Tapa has agenda was pay and conditions. And when the lads went into negotiations in good faith with the local authority, with the LGMA, which is the local government management agency, they were told by no, under no circumstances was their money available to the retained firefighters. Now, being a firefighter, you can't get a mortgage. The only monies you're guaranteed is your retainer, which starts off at €8,500 per annum. It's no good. What we need is a proper reform of the retained fire service and the way they're paid. What the firefighters are asking for is a salary, basically, so they can apply for mortgages, loans, whatever, that they do get a decent pension. Now, as I say, talks collapsed. Now, this lies, it doesn't lie, actually, believe it or not, with Darragh O'Brien. Darragh O'Brien is trying his best to resolve this, but it actually lies with the
Department of Finance,
deeper.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Release money, yeah. Too. Okay.
Yeah. They make these changes, which is actually a very, very small amount of money that it's going to take to actually resolve this.
Mm.
But Deeper has knuckled down and they said they'll be releasing no monies. That's Pascal Donoghue's office.
Yeah.
So it is. And Darragh O'Brien's hands seem to be tied at the moment within the government.
Right. Okay. Right, Stephen. And I mean, it's one of those whereby you're in the business of protecting people and saving lives, but enough is enough. And it's been foreshadowed. You had the work to rule. You've got today, and they know what's coming, and they know what ends this. As I say, I'm sure it's a tough decision for the members, Stephen.
It's an awful decision. It's an awful corner that the firefighters have been backed on. Like, the difference between the retained firefighter and our frontline services is that we actually live and work in our communities. You know, there are people. Firefighters do not want to be in this position. They've tried to avoid this. There were 16 months of talks that went on, 16 months with no resolution with the LGMA.
Mm.
Okay. You know, and they don't want to be in this position, but they feel they have to, because if they don't, the service is going to collapse anyway, Greg. That's the way the firefighters are looking at it now. Like,
You know,
if there's not intervention, I don't know where this is going to end up, Greg, and I don't think it's very healthy for anybody, you know, mentally or physically.
All right, Stephen McFadden, you've put the points across really well. Thank you. He's chair of the National Retained Fire Service Association. So we can go now to the protest the picket, I suppose you could say, in Lifford. Stephen Kelly is a firefighter from the Letterkenny station. Stephen, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Yeah, no problem, Greg.
As I said, a tough decision for you to make, Stephen, as well. You know, it could be your neighbours, your family, your friends that could be picking up the phone in an emergency, but I presume you feel that you have been painted into this corner and been left with no option.
Yes, that's correct. First and foremost, no firefighter on the picket line wants to be here.
Mm.
We want to be back in our communities ready to respond to an incident. This is the last option for us. You don't start with strike. You know, this is the last option, and we've been forced here by non-negotiations, and it's about let's make this clear. This is about saving the fire service, because it's on its knees at the minute and it's broken. And if we don't take this stand now, there won't be a fire service.
Can you, Stephen, either from your own experience or a typical experience of a firefighter, the current working conditions, how it impacts on someone's life in terms of, I don't know, job, loan applications or whatever it might be. Can you sort of describe what the life of a retained firefighter is like currently?
Yeah, we are expected to live and work within 2.5 kilometres of the fire station. To put that in context, in Letterkenny Fire Station, if you go to the mountaintop, you're outside the limit. You know, and that's not a big distance. So we're expected to live and work in that area, 2.5 kilometres, and respond night and day, 24/7, to calls. Now, that's what we signed up for. But what we didn't sign up for is to have stations on demand for years. No new recruits coming in, and then the pressure comes back on us to give the same service and respond in the same way, but with a depleted fire service.
Mm-hmm. And do most retained firefighters have to have another job as well, Stephen?
I mean, we have three categories of firemen. I mean, we have those who are self-employed, those who are unemployed, and those who are employed. Now, for the unemployed, that's their job, you know.
Everyone's status is different, isn't it? Yeah.
They have unemployment benefits, but isn't a lot. For those who are self-employed, you still have to kind of, I'm self-employed myself, so you struggle with trying to work within your limits. And when you want to work outside them limits, you have to book time off, which isn't always available. You're not entitled to time off on a whim. You have to book it. And then you have the employed firefighters. Now, employers don't want to employ firemen anymore because it's just too much of a hassle.
But the chances of getting a job that suits your skill set within those boundaries that is paying enough money to make it worthwhile, but also has a incredibly understanding employer. I know we've a lot of employment in this country, but I mean, that's an awful lot of boxes to tick, isn't it, Stephen?
It's an awful lot of boxes to tick. And the problem is, and why we're here today is because, as I said, the fire service is on its knees, it's broken. Mm. There's no one coming in. We have stations undermanned throughout the country, and Donegal isn't the worst, as I believe. But as Steve McFadden mentioned there today, Letterkenny's on strike, and our Coburn stations would be Milford, Fulcara, and Shenorder. Now, how does Fulcara, for instance, have three men available today? How are they going to cover Letterkenny? Mm. And that's not because they're on the picket line or they're on strike. It's because they have three men
available. And what this comes down to, really, and it shouldn't be something I don't think that the firefighters themselves should have to be striking for, it's about modernising the fire service to drag it into the 21st century.
It's to drag it out of the dark ages into what it should be today. You know, and how do you do that? You give structured time off, you give structured pay, and unless you do that, you're not going to entice anyone to come into the fire service and give 24/7 on call for very little in return. And that's what it's about. It's about a life balance, and it's about being able to get up in the morning and go to the beach with your children and not having to worry about the page you're going. Mm-hmm. It's about, you know, if I want to go and work a job outside the town, I can do it because I know I'm off that day. As it stands at the minute, that's not the way it is.
And it's not just you then as an individual, Stephen, and I don't mean you specifically, but, you know, firefighters, it's not just the individual. Then you have to have a very understanding family. You have to have a very understanding partner. You have to have children that you have to say, I'm sorry, son, or I'm sorry, daughter, I can't do that, or daddy's not available, or mommy's not available. You know, it's not just, it's different maybe if you're, you know, 22 and single or something, but a lot aren't, and it takes too many people to make too many sacrifices, seemingly.
It really does, and it impacts the families massively, more so than the firemen, because the firemen become adapted. We're in it for so long, we adjust. But the families, young kids, in our station alone, I think there's 8 children. Mm. Firefighters have 8 young kids under the age of 5, you know. So, I mean, it impacts the family massively. I mean, somebody was telling me there, just we're chatting about it, the newborn baby in the house, and the wife couldn't go down to the Tesco's to shop, mm-hmm, because they couldn't leave. The fireman was on call, couldn't get time off.
Yeah.
And couldn't stay on his own with his children, you know.
Yeah.
So I mean, it impacts massively on the families, and it's not the way it should be at the moment.
Right. Okay, Stephen. And is there a good crew of you out at Lifford today? I know you then you're heading to Letterkenny.
Today there's about 40 firemen here, and we're being received well here in Lifford. Anybody hand out leaflets and people beeping horns and cheering us on, and everybody seems to be behind us. You know, there's a massive support for us here in Lifford, and I'm sure when we go to Letterkenny, we're going to go to Letterkenny council offices. I believe there's a meeting on there, so we're going to go there about 1:30, and then we will proceed to Letterkenny fire station, the HQ.
Okay, well, listen, good luck. We never want to see you heading in our direction, if you know what I mean, Stephen. But as I said in the preamble, you do amazing work, and you aren't asking for an awful lot. You're asking for you're actually asking is to protect the fire service going forward. That's the irony of this situation. It's not even necessarily for personal gain. It's about there being a system that works.
Yes, as I said at the start, you know, this isn't. There's no man here that wants to be on strike. We want to be back in our communities, ready to respond to a fire call, but the service is broken, and we're trying to secure the service for the public, for our communities, for the future.
All right, Stephen, pass on our best wishes to the rest of the guys there today. Thanks very much for your time.
Thanks.
All right, bye-bye. Anna, you support Stephen and his colleagues, Anna, do you?
Oh, indeed, Greg. I fully support the stand that they are taking. I, for one, had no idea of the commitment that those men have to make. I think it's mind-boggling. You know, no money could possibly even compensate them for the work that they do. It is mind-boggling. That's just the only word that I could use for it.
Yeah, because you pointed out too in your message to us, Anna, you know, I don't think most of us would be equipped to do what they do, not only just the physical element of it, but also to deal with the psychological element of some of what they come across.
Oh, my goodness, the commitment that they have to make. And, like, it's not only just themselves, but their whole family is involved there. You know, as he says, there's certain, you know, things that happen, like weddings or funerals. Well, maybe funerals might be different. But the total and absolute commitment that they have to make is just, I just can't believe it all. I knew some of it, but I had no idea of the commitment that they make. So I, for one, fully understand their you know, give them my support.
Yep, you're
for the stand that they have to take, and it's a pity that they have to go to those extremes, you know, to get what they certainly deserve.
Mm. Okay, so you're tooting your horn for them anyway, Anna, in support. Thank you.
I'm tooting my horn, okay. And I couldn't get a big enough horn to toot for them.
Indeed. All right. God bless you, Anna. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling in. Hope you have a lovely day. You're well and all. I hope, which is good. Okay. Firefighters should not have the ability to strike. It is a life-threatening service and lives depend on it. Surely there's another way. These firefighters are part-time and are paid as such. If you're on call, are you part-time? If you're on call 24/7, are you part-time? I think there's a strong argument to suggest that you're not part-time. They would say, before it became a matter that we're discussing so publicly, they would have said that they have exhaust every avenue that's available to them to try to find a resolution. They've also tried to engage with the chief of the fire services across the country, and in terms of it's been hit and miss around the country in terms of contingency plans that have been put in place to facilitate this. So they would say they've done all of the can, but you can't. The fact that they can't strike, trust. That would be exploited. It's happening with the guards at the moment. The fact that the guards can't strike, they have to swallow the medicine, even though they're making certain appeals on government, etc. Good morning, Greg. If anyone, God forbid, died in a house fire and these boys are on strike, surely it's jail for holding people to ransom. It's a disgrace. All these boys want is more money, just like the politicians. I hope politicians are about to start 3 months' holidays. And they get about 115 grand a year. And switch on Dole TV and see how many of them are sitting in the seats. I know there's more to it than that. To compare a retained firefighter with a politician is a strange one for me. But anyway, listen, I respect your point of view. That's why I wanted you to call in. That's why I read it out. Thank you very much indeed. But anyway, keep our eyes on the prize, I would say. Salary is a retainer of some 8,500 annually to be on call for hours. Okay, so there's a mixture. Listen, come here. There is a mixture out there. That's what we like. Anna and others in full support of their action. Others think they're already doing okay. It's a democracy. It's an open platform here for all of you to have your say. Okay, we are going to be talking about some comments. Actually, we mentioned Darragh O'Brien. He made in the Dáil as it relates to governance and legislation and oversight and rules that were in place at the time when defective concrete was being used to manufacture blocks and to be laid as foundations and driveways and stuff. And I've been told, and I'm very interested in platforming here, that it really is quite significant what he said. I think Professor Paul Dunlop will be joining us shortly to explain exactly what was said and what the potential significance or implications of that might be.
There's nothing quite like a McDelivery in your own home, or eating a quarter pounder with cheese in your PJs. There's nothing like tucking into a box set with a Big Mac, or delving into your secret stash of dips, then dunking a McNugget in three of your favourite sauces. Because what you do in your home is your business. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. Order now in the Uber Eats or Just Eat app. At participating restaurants only. Serving times and delivery fees apply. See Uber Eats or Just Eat for full details.
The county's number one talk show, The 9 Till Noon Show on Highland Radio.
The 9 Till Noon Show with Letterkenny Credit Union. Simplify your debts with a debt consolidation loan from Letterkenny Credit Union. Call us on 074-910-2126 or apply online via our app or in office today.
She cuts in for the wing. Oh, that's superb. She's through on goal! Oh, yes, she scored a world-class win.
Sarah?
Huh? Oh.
Cadbury Buttons or Dairy Milk?
Oh, gosh, sorry. Don't dream about a world-class win. Enter to win one. Meet a world-class footballer and win an epic holiday worth £8,000. Only with Cadbury. T's and C's apply. Visit worldclass.cadburyfc.com.
Foy & Company are the largest stockists of the best quality exterior paints in the Northwest. All the best paint brands. Foy's qualified paint consultants are on hand to help you pick the right paint for the finish you want and the right colour to suit your home. Foy's also stock a great range of designer furniture and accessories, and their interior designers and stylists are always on hand to help. Call into Foy & Company, Ballybuffet or Letterkenny today.
Now is the time to experience all-electric driving for yourself with the Volkswagen Experience Electric Sales Event. From the 9th to the 17th of June at your local Volkswagen retailer, discover our all-electric cars, charging solutions, government incentives and our latest market-leading 232 offers. Plus, test drive the Volkswagen ID range, Ireland's best-selling all-electric cars, available for immediate delivery at your local Volkswagen retailer. Search Volkswagen ID. Volkswagen. Best-selling claim based on latest published figures.
Visit Connolly's Volkswagen at Canal Road, Letterkenny today. Book a test drive at connollys.ie.
Highland Radio Time Checks brought to you by Expressway. Ireland's national coach provider are inviting you to walk the Yellow Walk for 30 minutes on June the 21st. Sign up at grow.ie today. Expressway, bringing you the time at...
The time is precisely 28 minutes past nine. You're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show here on... Highland Radio. Okay, Professor Paul Dunlop, we've invited him onto the programme just to help us understand a bit of information. Paul, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on here.
Right, okay, so the opposition housing spokesperson, Owen O'Brien, asked Dara O'Brien a question on regulations yesterday. There seems to be a general sense that this is really quite significant. So what was the question? What was the answer? And I suppose we can tease it out from there, Paul.
I've got the question here in front of me. It says, Deputy Owen Brin asked the Minister for Housing, Local Government and Heritage if he will confirm from when Irish quarries and concrete producers had to comply with Irish standard EN 12620. That's the standard for aggregates for used in concrete. And then the minister answered, sort of a technical answer, but I mean, it clarified the dates of it. So I set out in the official journal of the EU, the applicability date for EN 12620 2002 was 1st of July 2003, subject to a coexistent period and date of 1st of January 2004. So obviously, there must have been allowed to use conflicting standards up until the 1st of January 2004, but that's the definitive date.
Right, so if those standards were properly applied, there was proper inspections and proper oversight, would we have, post that date, let's just use that as the date, would we be seeing what we're seeing right now in terms of houses crumbling to bits, foundations, driveways cracking, if that had been properly enforced and there was proper oversight?
Well, I mean, it seems to be the case, because if that's the date when that standard was applicable, and we have producers that are producing aggregates that are full of harmful minerals, I mean, in this case, the That standard refers quite clearly to pyrite and also pyrrhotite, and it sets the total sulfur limits that are allowable for aggregates that are being tested, and it clearly states that it can't be used for concrete if it breaches a certain level. So for me, looking at that answer last night, I was quite clear to me that if you've got a home that's made of defective concrete and the total sulfur coming from these iron sulfide minerals that are oxidizing is breaching EN 12620, then you'd be upset.
Yeah, to say the very, very least indeed. So what went wrong then? How could we find ourselves with IS EN 12620 and yet here we are with thousands of homes that are crumbling? What went wrong? Was it that it wasn't adhered to and no one picked it up?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of people have been on the show talking about this now over the years, and particularly post the conference as well. To me, it's clear that there's not an effective market surveillance system in Ireland that's picking up these issues. This is not my area of research, but my understanding of back at the time when these houses were built around that post 2004, that the market surveillance was done by the councils, the local authorities. That's a question for them, really. What were they doing in 2004 onwards to try and stop this thing happening, these products getting into the market? So obviously it's a failure of adequate market surveillance and testing at quarries and enforcing those regulations. You know, what's the point in having a regulation if it's not being enforced?
This seems to me, feels to me, and people might say, well, look, that was obvious already, but this seems to me in that it's so clear and in black and white and on the record of the door, which is not an insignificant thing, that this clearly states, this clearly underlines once again that affected homeowners have zero culpability here, and those that they trust and elected had all the responsibility, and they failed in that responsibility. And if that is the starting position, then the only outcome is a fully funded redress scheme that leaves no one affected by this out of pocket, because the state has to pay for the mistakes it clearly made then.
Well, I mean, I think all campaigners have been saying that from day one. You know, I mean, 100% redress, leave no one behind. I mean, the campaigners haven't left anyone behind. Our voices just haven't been heard strong enough. You know, the Department of Housing and the Minister have come up with the regulations for the enhanced block scheme, and they have left all the homeowners behind. There are no businesses at all whatsoever on this scheme. They're also victims of this problem as well too. But, you know, ultimately, government failure to regulation, field regulation, has caused this problem.
Yeah, and
as well as quarry manufacturers not following the guidance that they were meant to do after 2004, after the date that's now on the Dáil record. It's, as you say, it's quite good to see it in black and white, because there's been a lot of ambiguity floating around social media in the last few weeks about this, trying to muddy the waters in terms of when standards were in place and when they were law. So when you see the legislators stating the law in fact in the Dáil record, it's not insignificant, as you say. It's a very significant thing to have in place.
Yeah, okay. We await on Wednesday to see what we think on Wednesday that the enhanced, in inverted commas, scheme is going to be live. Have you any anticipations there, Paul? Not even from a scientific point of view, just as a concerned individual's point of view. Are you expecting anything?
I mean, as a homeowner, I've been waiting for this to open up now for quite a while. So we gave evidence in the Dáil last year in June. Remember the pre-legislative scrutiny day? And we were told that it was really important not to even have that day, because they wanted to get this through, get people's homes fixed. I mean, that's almost a year on that this scheme still hasn't opened. And I actually looked at my own test results last night. We got our house tested almost 2 years ago. It was July. We got our results back saying the house has to be demolished. So, like, we want to try and get our home fixed. We can't do nothing yet because the scheme hasn't opened. So, like thousands of others, we're all waiting with bated breath to see what the details of it are. We still don't know that. But I'm not privy to any information or any inside information on what the details of are on Wednesday when it comes out.
And it's crazy too. And it's when you get reminded of little parts of this ongoing journey. It takes some, well, how will I put it, testicular fortitude to try and avoid pre-legislative scrutiny that's going to cost the taxpayer many, many billions of euro, being that you want to speed it up to get house fixes. To say that with a straight face is tight, like, you know, I mean, it's...
Yeah, you know. I mean, ultimately, I think everybody wanted the right solution for homeowners and for business owners in all the affected counties. And it was within the gift of the government to give that, and they haven't given it. And one of the reasons has always been around the finances of it. And it's been quite galling the last few weeks listening to the government coming out about that they've got massive surpluses and they're going to have rainy day funds. I mean, if people's homes falling down around their ears, it's not a rainy day, a warrant of a rainy day fund, then what is their plan for all this surplus? They could have fixed the defect of concrete blocks of houses. They could have fixed all the defect of apartments in Dublin, everything with that, but they just didn't want to. And now we've ended up with a sort of half-baked scheme that we still don't even know the details of. Coming out this week that is leaving loads of people behind. It's leaving far too many people behind.
Yeah, all right. We'll tease that out more as the week rolls on. Thanks, though, for just giving us the full picture of the significance of that that being recorded in the Dáil yesterday. Professor Paul Dunlop, thank you very much indeed. 086 60 25000, WhatsApp or text to that number. A caller says, can you ask the firemen how they would tackle a wind turbine fire, given there are 313 turbines in the county? Do they have the equipment? Hi, Greg. Living in a rural area, was so grateful to the fire service who come to our aid almost every year when there are gorse fires. There are no words to express our thanks for what they do, often risking their lives to save homes and land. The government can give millions to greyhound racing, for example. Where is the justice there? Rightio. Okay, Owen, are you going to join me now or do you need a minute, Owen? Owen Curry is muted, is he? I don't know. Okay, I'll get back to Owen in a sec. We'll get back to Owen in a moment because the audio isn't coming through there. Assisted suicide. Oh, I read that one already. Greg, that's interesting, but I wonder, do you have to have a conviction to post your story there, or will all these stories be posted anonymous? Well, it is a space where people who have been the victims of crime, do you have to have a conviction? I would imagine not. Hi, Greg. A friend of mine invited all his cousins and plus ones, but one of the cousins brought her young son and caused ill feeling among other cousins whose children were not asked. Ooh. Now, was the younger cousin the plus one? My nose is falling off me now. I'm not a gossip, really. But did one of the people bring a son, a young son, as the plus one? Please let me know. 086 60 25000. Greg, I was down in casualty in Letterkenny University Hospital. It's a joke, like it has to be highlighted. People, young and old, are suffering. It's unreal. People that were there last night, if you just listen to their stories, it's a shame. Like, there has to be something done. These people that are on the HSE board, why don't they do the right thing and resign? They have to go. Nobody seems to care. Can you please highlight this? And of course we do. We will, and we do. And I'm sorry that was your experience. I really am. Greg, assisted dying is the Pandora's box of progressive policies that don't impact expenditure on the government, painted in the progressive colours. In the Netherlands, over 75s can get heart transplants. Holland, being the metropolitan of choice, isn't always good. That guard he had on was fantastic. As a young man, he's not just bombarding us all as bad. Thanks. Oh, listen, can I just say one thing? Young people on this programme get a very good hearing. They really do, because and we platform where all their achievements, be it awards or whatever they might be doing. What about the roads being closed for putting up these lights? How do people get to appointments? Well, we don't know what level of disruption there'll be in and around Letterkenny as a result of the traffic lights being installed there. Right, okay. Another caller says, Greg, after all the lies, we were told about abortion going to be only in rare circumstances, 33,000 and counting aborted in Ireland since the referendum, the three-day wait time being abolished. Why should we believe anything they say when introducing euthanasia in Ireland? I'm skipping a little bit from one subject to another, but we've had so many different comments on different things. There will be three sets of traffic lights between the Polestar roundabout and the Bonagie roundabout. I can foresee tailbacks to Manor roundabout. Yes, indeed. I'm going to suck it and see. We're going to wait. Lots of people can't do anything for themselves. It doesn't mean they should be euthanized. It's not true that modern medicine can control pain, not in my experience, indeed. And chronic pain, there are thousands and thousands of people with chronic pain. Right, is Owen Corrie, editor of Air and Travel Magazine, ready for us? Hello, Owen, can you hear me? Owen, are you there? Can you hear me okay, I wonder? Right, okay, he's connecting to audio and will be able to hear me very shortly. Owen, are you there?
I am indeed.
Yay! I feel like I've gone on holidays with you, Owen.
Absolutely. Here I am and ready to go.
It's great to have you with us. Thanks so much. You're always really accommodating and I hope you realise it's appreciated, Owen. And check out Air and Travel magazine as well. Right, okay. EasyJet could be getting the go-ahead to go head-to-head with Ryanair, which is always good news for us. What's in the offing there, Owen?
Well, we know very little about this, apart from the fact that EasyJet have applied for slots at Dublin Airport. No real indication. It's quite normal for airlines to apply for slots that they don't use. Ryanair are famous for applying for slots all over Europe. It leaves people like me guessing what routes are they opening, what routes are they not opening. They use very few of them. But it does give an indication well in advance of, for instance, Ryanair made a very big surprise move into Albania last week. And, you know, you'll get, by watching the slots, you can pick this up. EasyJet used to apply for slots almost every year in Dublin Airport. They haven't been doing so in recent years. Long ago, there was an unmerciful dogfight between Ryanair and EasyJet. We're talking about 2004, Greg. They went into Knock, they went into Shannon, they went into Cork. They put on routes to Gatwick. Ryanair trebled the number of routes they had on services they had on those routes and burned EasyJet off very quickly. Go also famously went head-to-head with Ryanair out of Dublin. Low-cost airline against low-cost airline. Doesn't happen very often. Ryanair burned Go off the route. So the real assumption was that Dublin is a fortress. Nobody's going to come in there. Things might have changed a bit. And one of the indications that things have changed is that EasyJet, they're very, very strong in Belfast International Airport. They have more than 80% of the flights there. They now have seven based aircraft, I was going to say, but they're going to have another one this year. And Ryanair have gone in and competed on routes like Alicante, Faro. So it could well be this is a retaliatory strike. Ryanair come into Belfast International, EasyJet say, well, if you're going to come into our backyard, we're going to go into yours. There also is another thing that there are underserved routes, believe it or not, out of Dublin. Ryanair are making all sorts of noises about not bringing their new aircraft. They've 34. Their operation in Dublin is huge. They have 34 based aircraft. They're saying we mightn't bring some of the newer MAX, 737 MAX into Dublin, playing hard to get with Dublin Airport. And now EasyJet have slots. So we could see nothing very massive. We could see a little bit. For instance, some of the ski routes are being rumoured here in Dublin this morning. And we could see them going into the very strong routes that EasyJet have in England. They've a new base in Birmingham to open next year. Leeds, Bradford, they're strong. Southend, which nobody really flies to from Dublin, they're strong there. So they could serve some of those. You've got to remember, EasyJet's brand isn't very well known in Ireland. Certainly it is in Northern Ireland, but less so in Ireland. And you've got also the trunk routes that everybody can never get enough flights on, like Alicante, like Faro, like Malaga. EasyJet, interestingly enough, the slots are not by their UK operator, but by their European airline. Since Brexit, they've had to have two separate licenses. And the European license is held in Austria. So it does look like EasyJet are playing with the idea of opening up Dublin. They see lots of growth opportunities there. They're going to be there for any incentives Dublin Airport put in for new routes because they can't be excluded from them. And it will be very interesting to see if Ryanair respond with the sort of very, very strong response they had all those years ago with Go in Dublin and EasyJet in Shannon, Knock and Cork, because that means we could have flights on those routes for very, very little money. I do remember €1 flights to in competition with Go from Dublin to Edinburgh. Not sure that'll happen because things have moved on a lot since then, but it's a very interesting development, Greg.
For sure, Owen, when will we know if EasyJet are hedging their bets, saber-rattling, or when that we'll actually know intent from them? Is it for this year? Is it for next year? Is it for the winter, for the skiing or what have you? When do you expect we'll actually know their intent?
usually when they have to sell the flights. Nobody likes trying to sell it, announce a flight today and sell it tomorrow. We have that situation with Hainan, July 27. They're restarting the Dublin-Beijing direct. We were given very little notice. So a lot of those flights are going to be quite empty at the start and very good prices on them. But we have sometimes we have very sudden announcements. In the days of the internet, particularly Ryanair, are very good at announcing a route and just launching it a few weeks later. They have the excess aircraft to do so. What I would expect, though, Greg, is that during July, August, we're going to get notice of if there's going to be a winter flight from EasyJet, for instance, a Salzburg route or an Austrian route to serve the ski market. And then around January, February, the summer schedules, which start in March, are confirmed. So over the next few months, there'll be a lot of number crunching. The EasyJet will be looking at what prices they can make on those flights, what the expectation of the public or what the price point the public will pay is. They'll also be looking at what aircraft they have available. And they'll certainly be watching those trends. But the people who would be watching them even more avidly are Ryanair, because Ryanair, they're headquartered in Dublin. They regard Dublin as their fortress.
Their backyard. Okay, I won't keep you much. Just a brief one on travel insurance, because, you know, we could be facing, and we have been facing strikes. So when people need to make sure that the travel insurance they get covers them in that eventuality, I'd imagine.
Absolutely, because flight disruption is not covered by your common or garden travel policy. There's 80 euro or so we pay for an annual policy now, and it covers very basic stuff. Flight disruption tends not to be one of them. It tends to be an add-on, although some of the bigger companies are putting in flight disruption as part of it. It tends to cost 5 or 6 euro extra. It's very good because we're looking at air traffic control strikes and probably other strikes across Europe. The weather events, we saw that disrupted Gatwick yesterday and some of the Spanish airports last week, or thunderstorms. If you're missing a concert or a match or a very big family event, the airline won't cover you for that. They won't cover for your ticket, whereas the flight insurance, depending on the conditions, will. It's a good add-on to have for the summer. Flight insurance also has got better on the medical side. They were excluding COVID as COVID recedes into the past. That seems to be covered by most policies. But certainly over the last 2 or 3 years, we've got a very valuable lesson, Greg, that flight insurance is very important.
Owen, thank you very much indeed. I really appreciate your time today. Have a lovely day. Take care of yourself. Okay, goodbye. Now, another thing too is, and I'm no expert on this, by the way, is, but when I was chatting to people about travel insurance, and I haven't been anywhere for quite some time, people wait, they book their holiday, and then they get travel insurance before they depart. If you get travel insurance, get it when you're booking the holiday, because then if anything happens between when you booked and your departure, you could fall ill or anything, you're covered. Because what happens is that people book their holiday and then they wait before they're traveling a day or two or three before and then get their travel insurance. Get it when you get the booking, because you never know what might come up, or you never know what might need to be covered. So book your travel insurance when you book your flight would be my advice. All right, Tim, what's being seen as a significant development? Ireland is set to gain an additional seat in the European Parliament in the upcoming elections. MEP Sean Kelly of Fine Gael joins us on the programme. I mean, this was being flagged, but I suppose now that it seems more than likely, it's easier for us to talk about, Sean, with some certainty.
That's correct, because as a vote of the Institutional Affairs Committee last night here in Strasbourg, 16 voted in favour of the proposal, 10 against. So that's a good majority, and that usually carries forward to the Parliament itself. And then once it's passed in Parliament, usually the Council will go along with it. There was one key reason why they went for this proposal, because it means that no country would be losing a seat, even though, strictly speaking, some should, because their population has gone down, whereas our population has gone up by 300,000, which it entitles us to an extra seat. But because it has to be agreed unanimously by the member states, it was felt that if we were taking seats off some member states so close to an election, which is in June next year, then we mightn't get the unanimity we require at the council level. But now I think it should be easy to get the final result and Ireland will gain the extra seat.
And there's further speculation, and has been around for some time, that it's actually the North West constituency that would gain that seat. Is that your understanding of it?
That would be probably the most logical. No, nobody knows, because the Constitutional Committee will have to be set up by the government, and they could do anything, as you know. But I think the logical thing would be to have an extra seat Midlands North West, because we have five already in the south, so obviously you're not going to go to six. You can't go to six. So it would be either Dublin or Midlands North West. And I think some of the counties in the Ireland South were already in Midlands North West for a long, long time. So it wouldn't be such a big change for them to switch. And that would give you the balance that you're required to have in what they call a beautiful phrase, degressive proportionality. In other words, it has to reflect the population so that there would be a certain minimum number of MEPs according to a certain number of the population.
Yeah, it's actually quite interesting to see some countries, their population decreasing, isn't it? I mean, you know, we have to be careful here on this planet that we ensure our survival. All right, Sean, listen, thanks for your time. Great to chat to you. Have a lovely day. Sean Kelly there, who's a Fine Gael MEP. So another MEP for the North West, it might seem. Okay, we're very close to the end of the show. It's been another busy one. I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you so much for listening every day. It's very much appreciated. It's actually essential. If the truth be told, we need you. Thanks for those of you who watch the show as well. I think we got it right today. We have our quiz in the bag. We have another €100 voucher, one for all voucher to give away in the show tomorrow. There's another one on Thursday and then on Friday. So if you weren't lucky enough today to get involved, a lot of people don't like coming on air, but don't be shy. I'll look after you, right? So if you want to be in with a chance to winning, the absolute majority of people, I think it's something like 90-odd% of people, will never go on a radio station. That's why, you know, phone-in shows can't really be sustained in this country, and they really have to make up listeners. We never have to do that, by the way, but make up or try and get stooges to get a conversation going, because there's not the population here. We never do that, by the way. Don't be shy. Come on, have a chat. It's a bit of crack. We want you on the show. We'll tell you how you can get involved again tomorrow. Thanks to Caroline Orr, who researched and produced the show, and Niamh as well, working flat out on the programme as well. Stay tuned. John Bresson's coming up around the Northwest, but for me, Greg Hughes and the team, enjoy the rest of your Tuesday.